This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Good afternoon. Welcome. If I ran my business the way you people operate your school, I wouldn't be in business very long. I stood before an auditorium filled with outraged teachers who were become angrier by the minute. My speech had entirely consumed their precious 90 minutes of in-service training. Their initial icy glares had turned to restless agitation. You could cut the hostility with a knife. I represented a group of business people dedicated to improving public schools. I was an executive at an ice cream company that became famous in the middle 1980s when People magazine chose its blueberry flavor as the best ice cream in America. I was convinced of two things. First, public schools needed to change. They were an archaic selecting and sorting mechanisms designed for the industrial age and out of step with the needs of our emerging knowledge society. Second, educators were a major part of the problem. They resisted change, hunkered down in their feathered nests, protected by tenure and shielded by a bureaucratic monopoly. They needed to look to business. We knew how to produce quality, zero defects, total quality management, continuous improvement. In retrospect, the speech was perfectly balanced, equal parts of ignorance and arrogance. As soon as I finished, a woman's hand shot up. She appeared polite, pleasant. She was, in fact, a razor-edged veteran high school English teacher who had been waiting to unload. She began quietly. "We are told, sir, that you manage a company that makes good ice cream." I smugly replied, "Best ice cream in America, ma'am." "How nice," she said. "Is it rich and smooth?" 16% butterfat, I crowed. "Premium ingredients?" she inquired. "Super premium, nothing but triple A." I was on a roll. I never saw the next line coming. "Mr. Vollmer," she said, leaning forth with a wicked eyebrow raised to the sky, "when you're standing on your receiving dock and you see an inferior shipment of blueberries arrive, what do you do?" In the silence of that room, I could hear the trap snap. I was dead meat, but I wasn't going to lie. "I send them back." "That's right," she barked. "And we can never send back our blueberries. We take them big. Small, rich, poor, gifted, exceptional, abused, frightened, confident, homeless, rude, and brilliant. We take them with attention, deficit, hyperactivity, disorder, junior, a rheumatoid, arthritis, and English as their second language. We take them all, every one. And that, Mr. Vollmer, is why it's not a business. It's school." In an explosion, all 290 teachers, principals, bus drivers, aides, custodians, and secretaries jumped to their feet and yelled, "Yeah, blueberries, blueberries." Reigniting the passion to teach. Are you here today because your passion to teach has not been reignited? Or maybe you never found much passion to teach. Well, I find coming to workshops to help to reignite my passion to teach. I love asking teachers throughout the summer, enjoying their summer, looking forward to school, and very interesting, the variety of answers I get. Talk to one, trying to see if he's in here, I don't believe he is, a few weeks ago, and yeah, I'm ready for school any day. Wow, that was a little energizing even for me. Just to hear that positive feeling. I talked to others, of course, who weren't that excited, who just, "Well, I'm enjoying my summer so much," and as if, you know, it's going to come to an end. Like the enjoyment part is going to come to an end. Well, one of my friends has on her status, missing school, or maybe for a profile, I think it is. Ah, I like that, missing school, kind of anxious to get back again. Teaching that impacts is not from head to head, it's from heart to heart. It's a total personality, transformed by the supernatural grace of God, reaching out to transform total personalities by the same grace. What a privilege. I like that last sentence. What a privilege. We'll talk about that a little more later. All right. So let's go into, I just divided this very simply into choices to make, truths to remember, and things to do. And I would like your participation in a few things. Well, let's begin with choices to make. One of the most important choices you can make as a teacher, whether you're a veteran teacher or not, and that is a very simple concept, choose to depend on God. How many of you are teaching 10 years or more? Wow, 15 years or more. Do you still need God, you teachers? You still need God. See, it seems like we need God less the more we know. We can feel that way. But also, I find myself feeling at times that the more I know, the longer I teach, the more I need God. The less I know. I enjoy asking brand new teachers in the summer sometimes, so how do you feel about school? And once in a while, you'll hear a fairly smug answer. Oh, pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, I think I can handle it. It's only 2 grades, 6 students. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And ask those same teachers a few months into school, how's school going? Wow, it's not what I thought it would be. It's more demanding than I thought. And so as we teach, we come to realize increasingly how much we need God. Because there's certain awarenesses that we come to. It maybe is not so much I need God to teach that math class because I really still don't know how to explain fractions. Or I still struggle with direct objects. I'm really not sure. I need God. No, we should become definitely more competent, right, in those skills. Increasingly, we master materials, but we still need God for wisdom to teach other people's children. I have 7 children. I need a lot of wisdom to teach my 7 children. But in some ways, I feel even that I need more wisdom. I need to treat it with more carefulness, my teaching, because these are other people's children. So dependence on God. Let's never develop a smug attitude that I'm ready to teach. I got what it needs. Been successful as a teacher, appreciated in the community. And I'm sure I'll pray sometime. I need God for backup sometime. No, you need God. You need God every day. So let's remember that. And here's where I'd like your help a little bit. In B, I will choose a positive attitude. I don't care if you say disposition or spirit. I will choose a positive attitude. Now, this gets into the personality question. I would imagine that some of you find it easier to wake up in the morning and your general disposition is positive. You're excited about teaching. You love going to school, and you're off. Some might be a little bit the opposite. I don't do mornings, and school starts way too early. And so it's hard to have this positive attitude. There's a saying on the board that I think one of our teachers put up there just this year that I really like. The greatest thing about teaching is that it matters. The hardest thing is that it matters every day. I'll say that again. I see some of you want to write this down. The greatest thing about teaching is that it matters. Now nod her head, say, yeah, matters. It's fulfilling. But the hardest thing is that it matters every day. What you bring to the classroom, your attitude, matters every single day. I've taught school most of my adult life, but I did a few other things. I sold cars for 2 years. I spent 2.5 years recently in South America in mission work. And was not, of course, in the classroom and for those times away from school. And, you know, emotions could just run a little freer. Within the range seemed a little bigger, at least. Now, we all know, you don't go way out here. But you didn't feel quite as well. You know, you could afford maybe not to smile quite as early and just kind of free up and just kind of get over it. We shouldn't be doing that at school. It matters every day, every minute. That best foot forward is tiring, isn't it? And so there's a certain amount of compartmentalizing that we need to do as teachers, and I'd like you to think about that. We have a life outside of school, and it matters. But when we get to school, somehow we need to, at a certain level, I'll take my words too far out of context here, at a certain level, we must be able to lay that aside and bring our best to our students. And to me, that is part of reigniting the passion to teach, is that commitment that I must think of ways to bring my best to my students every day and be honest with the distractions that I face and do something about them. Yes. Sometimes terrible things happen in the middle of the year. Of course that influences your teaching. You might need a break from teaching. I understand that. I'm not wanting to be insensitive to that. But just the daily roll of life, financial ups and downs. I don't feel as well, I feel better. Something tough about a friendship, a relationship, a worry. We need to at least try to level those things out and leave things behind that we need to leave behind. Our students should not say, I have a moody teacher. Really shouldn't. You should not be a moody teacher. It's hard, isn't it? Your students should not say, whoa, look out. I think he's grumpy today. No tricks. I have some former students in here, and I really hate talking about this. But I'm saying it anyhow, because it's true. We have to be a steady and bring ourselves to school the best we can bring every day. So I would like you to take a little time, a minute or two, and then share what are the things that really make this difficult for you, as you, particularly now as you look into the next year. Then I'd like some thought. I would like you to just take a minute or two and just stop talking, maybe write them down, think about what are the things that you know detract from the passion of teaching due to these negative things. And I'm not going to give a lot of suggestions. I would like you to share them. And if it's extremely personal, certainly don't need to do that. Maybe you want to talk to your neighbors about it. What are things that you find to be draining that make this difficult? All right, give you a few minutes right now. Go ahead. All right, maybe your paper is blank, that's all right. But let's share some. And I think we find that we face common draining components of school. Give me a few.
Lack of sleep.
Lack of sleep. That's an easy fix. We'll actually talk about that more later. What else? Yes.
The previous term being extremely difficult and stressful. Mm-hmm.
So we find as we teach and we have the same students, this comes back to haunt us, right? The joys of the last day. Suddenly, No, we're back at it again. Right. The relief of the last day of school, the past school term. That relief is over. Or almost. All right. Thank you. What else? Yes.
Working on the situation day after day, it doesn't change.
Mm-hmm. So feeling trapped in a situation. Wow. Thank you. What else? Yes.
Students not interested in the same thing I am, or not passionate about the same subject.
All right, so just an overall atmosphere of, we gotta be here. Like we say, a necessary evil. Can be extremely draining. I talked to some teachers particularly that struggle with that in communities where the culture is pretty negative towards school. Pretty hard to change. Wow, thank you. Very draining. Anybody else?
Parents.
Parents. Wow, I see some people nodding their heads. Are you afraid of a few parents? When they call?
I have been
from time to time. Have been? Oh, I have too. Yeah. When they call, you just figure it's probably a complaint, probably a negative. All right, thank you for being honest. That's a really tough one. Makes us insecure very quickly, doesn't it? Sure does. What else? Anything else? All right, so as I think of what you shared and I think about what drains me as a teacher, some of those things we can deal with, particularly, specifically, and others we can't change. And I didn't bring the saying along, but something about God give me the grace to know what I can change, what I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference. It's said more beautifully than that, but you understand what I'm saying. So we as teachers need to decide, what can I change? This draining component that kind of sucks the energy, what can I change? What can I not change, and then not allow that to become bondage? Which I know that's easier said than done. So I think it teaches who get very frustrated. I was a little surprised that all the papers I'm going to need to correct this year. Wasn't mentioned, but I'm sure some of you thought about that. Some teachers find that extremely tiring. Talked to one teacher after a Bible study this past school year, and he said, you know, I still got 100 and whatever it was papers to correct yet tonight. I think my mom hopefully helped me with some of them. Oh, that is so draining. What can you do about that? Do you have to correct all those papers? I told him, I don't think you do. Now, I know you come from different cultures, so I want to be careful what I say. And individualized CLE, maybe they don't have all the correcting versus other types of curriculum. And he was in the kind of culture I'm used to as far as paper, the amount of papers that are generated. It is a lot of work. What can you do about them? Must you do this? Really, at the end of the day, when you see the report card, you could go through and you could strike out randomly every other line and the grade probably would not change at all. I'm not talking about tests. Certainly not more than 1%. And the hours of work. So evaluating, what can change? What would my board administration be okay with adjusting? Because that drains me. All those hours of doing that, then I can hardly study. So think about the things that would drain you and maybe what you can adjust. Particular students, previous situations, they are hard things. We'll talk about that maybe just a little more later. Those are draining things that, again, I find that they can just be so, such a detriment to the joy of teaching, because every day I just face this and I just feel trapped. I can't get out of it. The only hope is that someday they'll be in the next room. And then here comes his brother. Heard of one patron who talked about when he went to school in a complete different setting and how this teacher just was not able to compartmentalize and put her emotions aside. She could be amazingly sweet when the board came, but the stories he told, I hardly believed, but he told me later when he was not in public anymore, or didn't have an audience in front of him, that it was a lot worse even than that. that he talked about the anger, the bitterness of life that this woman just wore. And the students paid for it. He said she would come by and stand on our feet if our foot was out in the aisle. And then she would just lean on it. You couldn't get it out. Just mean physical things. She brought her frustration of life into school, and the students paid for it. A board member would come visit, she could flip a button. Your students should not experience that frustration of life, disappointments of life being played out in the classroom, your relationships. All right, let's go to the second part. Things to remember. I wasn't quite sure about this, saying it this way, but I'm going to give this as a phrase or a sentence. Teaching is a calling from God. I'm not sure how much to play that one up. I hear teachers sometimes say, you know what? I don't see teaching really as a calling from God, really. It's my job. I'm a career teacher. You're a carpenter. You're a painter. Guess what? I'm a teacher. You know, there's something to be said for that. Maybe the pay makes you wonder if that's really true, but it is a job. It's my life. That's what I do. It kind of feels like who I am. But let's not lose sight of, we need to at least feel that we are in God's will and under His blessing in this teaching. I like to think of it maybe that way, rather than every year I have to just pray and fast and just make sure that I know God wants me to teach. And if I wouldn't be teaching, I would clearly be outside of God's will. I'm not sure that I want to fight that battle every year. Do you? I don't know if you have any comment on that. More that this is the gifting I believe God gave me. I enjoy it. I believe I'm under His blessing. But I'm not saying I would be wicked to do something different. But still, I like to believe that we should have a sense of calling, that I do believe God's hand is in this, and I'm under His blessing in my pursuit. So as I look at the school year and the negatives that I know I will face, because I've been in this school quite a few years and I know my students fairly well, it's comforting to know that God's going to walk with me through this coming year because I'm under His blessing. This is a calling from God. But let's not overly emphasize that or hold that up as a special calling from God that is so different than all the other people in my church. I got this special calling. I think someone said there's ditch on both sides, and there's a lot of ditch and just a little bit of road. But just remember that it's a calling from God, but let's be careful how we think about that and the insecurities we can struggle with when the road is a little rough and we're, well, I'm not, and maybe I wasn't as sure as I should be that this was God's will. Now I'm having these struggles. Well, it's a calling from God, but yes, it's also my choice that here's what I enjoy doing, and I'm going to do it. So there's, again, let's just be careful with that. Any comments on that concept? I'm curious how you see it.
I believe in whatever we do should be where God wants us, mm-hmm. whether it's teaching, mm-hmm. construction, mm-hmm. whatever it is, we're where God wants us to be, mm-hmm. at this time, for myself at this time in my life.
So you're not sure that a teacher should have that much different of a feeling that this is where God wants him to be versus the carpenter in the church. He feels that's a door God opened for him. That's what he's doing. That's God's calling his life to do well there.
I like that.
I do too. I do too. It feels to just kind of level things out a little bit, doesn't it? Even in church life and social life, that we're not holding ourselves up as having this holy calling from God. There's some traps in that thinking. Way over in this ditch. Thank you for that. Anything else? All right. B, teaching is an opportunity to impact the kingdom of God. Now, we know that, but I find that to be inspiring and helps to reignite my passion when I try to think beyond the details of what drags me down to try to just back away a little bit. Teaching is an opportunity to impact the kingdom of God. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, the same shall commit them to faithful men who shall be able to teach others. Teachers, you will be off the scene someday. I need to think about that. I started teaching at Myerstown Mennonite School in 1989. Next year will be 30 years. I did not teach all my years there. And I didn't teach quite all those years either. But even if I had, someday, Anthony Hurst and Myerstown School, there'll be no connection. And it's good for me to just step back and picture, and I try to do this in my mind's eye, Myerstown School running. None of the faculty that's there now will be there. These will be children or grandchildren of the students I teach. Now, they will have no idea who I was. They'll be just running along just fine. It helps put it in perspective. We're part of a bigger picture of preparing the next generation to take up the work and successfully carry it forward. It helps us to back away from that everyday frustration. This too shall pass. Have you taught long enough to experience that? To almost smile sadly at how worked up you were about a situation? This too shall pass. After a while, it feels like it was in another world. And yet, when you were in it, it felt like it was the only world, and it was forever. Some of you maybe heard me say this before, but I'm going to say it again. I met my former teacher a while ago. Boy, would I wonder what he was thinking. He asked me, he said, "Are you principal down here at the road at Myerstown Mennonite School? Was that an auction?" "Yes, I am." And then he chuckled. And then he said something about, "Well, you never know what life will bring." I just wanted to... let's not talk about any stories. I am sure I remember some very foolish things I did and said in school. Well, this too shall pass. I've taught long enough to have students that I taught their parents. Some of those are now, those students are out of school. I call them my grand students. I like to say, "Your dad, your mom." This too shall pass. Life moves on. Let's just remember that we don't become just so trapped in the present situation. So that is a blessing in seeing them grow up. I can think of one who I believe he's ordained. He had been in the lot anyhow. I taught him, this was years and years ago, and I remember some things that he did, his immaturity. There he is today. A man of God, a good family, quite a few students that are ordained, and our churches are personal friends of ours now. And think of, you know, way back then and the struggles. And here they are. They make good choices. Of course, not all of our students make good choices. But it helps, again, to put it in perspective. What we are doing today is not just about making it through today, making it through this school year, if I can just survive. Well, this is about, can we develop in this child a love for God, a passion for serving the Lord, and not allow us to be taken down with the tough things that certainly do happen. Next, letter C, teaching is an opportunity, not an obligation. I want to talk about this one carefully. But teaching is an opportunity, not an obligation. All right, so some teachers were hired in June, July, and August. They possibly went into teaching as an obligation. The board, with tears in their voice, saying, "Will you please consent to teach?" My sister was called years ago, and well, I think this is lady number 80 that we have called. I don't know if that put obligation on. I guess if there's 80 people on the list, there certainly has to be 81 and 82, you know. But sometimes teachers have felt obligated because, well, if I don't teach, I don't know who will. School's starting in a few weeks. So there's still not a teacher. And I'm sure there's schools like that right now that are supposedly, some of you nodding your head. Somebody's going to feel obligated to teach. You might start your career that way, but that is not an energizing way to teach. Again, to feel the hand of God on you saying, "This is what I've called you to," is a blessing. And in that, there is that responsibility, but not obligation. When we feel that, some negative things happen. A teacher friend of mine years ago, she said, "Well, I just feel like quitting. Then they'll know, you know, what it's like to go look for a teacher." She taught a few years. She was feeling like she's being taken advantage of. And she no longer, at that moment, was seeing it as a privilege. It was an obligation, a service I'm doing, and I just feel like quitting. Kind of to raise the awareness of the privilege of having me as a teacher. It's a little bit what she wanted to say, but didn't say it quite that way. If we feel it is an obligation to the community, then we almost need a steady stream of affirmation. Don't we struggle with that as teachers? Sometimes we're a little insecure. We are serving the board, the patron body, and if they're not happy with us, we really don't want to be there, right? That's the one side. And what we tend to do then is we need that steady stream of affirmation that we're doing okay to keep me passionate about what I'm doing. It's a privilege. I'm serving them, I'm privileged, I want to be under their blessing, but not be almost mesmerized or just every day, I just need to keep, those notes gotta keep coming. And if not, apparently I'm not appreciated, my obligation's over, I'll quit. Again, there's both sides of it. We can, if you feel like you're taken advantage of, you're serving God. You will feel that, I assure you. If you are a career teacher, there were times, or I'd be amazed, if there weren't times that you felt taken advantage of, taken for granted, right? You'll be there, you'll keep doing it, you're doing a good job. Parents, board members, they're busy. Just go ahead and keep running it. And when we feel taken advantage of, then we tend to lose heart. Well, no, wait, we're serving God. It's a privilege to teach these children. Guess what? They're the same children, whether or not you're getting all this affirmation or not. Your opportunities day after day are still before you. But if we need that as fuel, there's some dangers with that. Obviously, the other side is, if you're not doing a satisfactory job, well then, obviously that takes the steam away from us quickly. That's true as well. All right. Moving on to letter D. It is more important to be than to do. Now, here is... This is particularly for the perfectionist. The rest of us who tend to do things by the seat of our pants, we shouldn't be listening. I'm curious, are some of you like that? You can kind of wing it and pull it off. Raise your hand. Oh, look at this. You can raise your hand just a little bit. You're kind of perfectionistic and got to get it all right. Oh, wow, some are just raising their hands. So what do you do with that when it's the reality of, and I want some discussion here, I need my sleep, and I would like a life outside of school, and this is consuming all my time and energy. What can we do about this? Some teachers quit because of this. The demands are too, and sometimes the demands are too great. It's not doable. It's too many students, too many needs in the classroom, too many grades, it is not doable. But sometimes it is doable if we can remember this. It's more important to be than to do. So what do? To survive and not feel so guilty that you didn't get it all done just right. Some of us should feel more guilty. More guilty. But some are on the other side. This is a workshop. A breakout, I guess they call them now. Something to share. Yes?
Well, sometimes I make a deliberate choice to leave something undone, mm-hmm. or not done as well as I would mm-hmm. like it done. Mm-hmm. And if you do it a couple of times, becomes easier.
Okay. Well, I like that honesty. So you're kind of searing your conscience here. Okay. And you found out that it was okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's very good. The same yeah. thing. And a lot of it goes with attitude, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's not everything can be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
not everything should be done by the seat of your pants either.
Mm-hmm.
Your attitude.
Okay. Thank you. Very good.
I found it helpful to give a certain amount of time. You can go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
After you taught a while, it might feel the other way sometimes. Like you can knock out early.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that too much, too. In other words, just I'm going to give it this many hours.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can get done in that amount is sufficient.
All right. Very good point, especially man that's married, you have ministerial responsibilities, you have a family, to say, this is the allotted time I can give. I'll be efficient, I'll prioritize, and then I will go home at a certain time. I might get up a little early to make up for it, but I have to let that rest. See, I would encourage you, if you're the perfectionistic type of person, to find things, though, that gives you energy outside of school. I find that I just need those connections, whether it's music, whether it's just enjoying nature, or friendship, time with your family. Because it is important to be, more important to be than to do. Again, let's not take this way out of context. So the teacher who stays up that extra hour or two to just polish it off, but then in the morning doesn't feel very well and has a hard time bringing themselves to school in a positive frame of mind. Really, what is best for your students? To be able to bring yourself your best. And you need to take care of yourself. You need your sleep, tough as it is. And you need to, like you said, just go ahead and make the choice that, you know what, that would really polish that class off. That chart would be so nice. But guess what? It's not going to happen. Instead, I have an invitation with this family. I enjoy that. I need to get out of the classroom and get that inspiration. And that's the choice I'm going to make. So maybe think of it this way. In a sense, there is a minimum. We got to get to this point. At least we try to. In all the subjects, there's a certain amount of mastery. But when we go beyond that, this gets very expensive. Sometimes we can go a little bit beyond. We enjoy that. We find that energizing, actually. I find that hugely energizing. We'll talk about some of that later. Extra study, extra things to bring to your students. You're so excited about the next day because I want to tell them. Do you find over the summer different times like, that's right, we're not having school right now. I do that many times. I want to tell my students right now with the politics going on. You know, I want to tell, how do we get back to school so I can tell them about the midterm elections? So there's things we find energizing that we do here that are kind of the extras. But at some point, what we gain is not worth it. What we lose, we're trying to gain more time polishing it off, studying more, getting it all together. But what we gained at the end, it cost us more than what we should be paying. Is that making sense? Music, especially experienced teachers, and those who are really perfectionistic, teacher already said, I just feel guilty if I don't do that. I know. And we have to be careful with each other in our schools. You work with a co-teacher, and if you're the kind that just kind of does it and just pulls off a flare and it works, you can become irritated at the teacher, just stays there, kind of make you feel guilty, right? Ever have that? Make you feel good if we're going home? Because they're still there working away. Well, it's another subject of relationships among the faculty, but... Again, it's both sides of that where you say, you know what? I have to call that good enough because what I'm going to gain outside of school is part of what I can be tomorrow in just my overall emotional health and physical well-being. All right. More important to be than to do. Again, there's limits to everything. All right. The third one. Things to do. Well, this is a simple one. Pray for your students. Pray for your students. There was a teacher that was highly successful, and he was a young man and just seemed to do well in school. And a veteran teacher visited this young man and said, what's the secret of your success? And the young man he just didn't really know what to say. But in the course of conversation, the young man pulled out a book in which all the names of the students were written and what he prays about for those students. Ah, that was the key. As he brought those needs to the Lord, day after day, number one, it conditioned his heart to meet those students as they came in the door because he had prayed for them. And God also takes our prayers, and there's power in those prayers. You believe that? Do you believe that God will work in the hearts of your students if you pray for them? I forget that way too often, don't you? I need to fix this problem. I got to come up with a strategy. I'll talk to the administration or a co-teacher or the parent or. We've got to figure out what's wrong. Well, yes, we do need to step up to the plate and work with situations. But let's pray. That's one of my burdens for this school year as I studied this. I need to pray more for our students. Quite a few years ago, we were having particular difficulty with a few high school students and my two co-teachers, men co-teachers, in our school. We decided, let's get together and pray for those students. So we met early, and we sat in their desks, and we just prayed for them. Miracle? No, but it was good for me. And I believe God heard those prayers. It conditioned my heart to hear my co-teachers pray for them and for me to take time praying for them. Now when they walk in the classroom, I just prayed for him. I care about his soul. Not just, I was hoping he'd call in sick today. Now, of course, there's times that we wear out. I understand that. There's situations that are beyond what we can handle. I understand that. But let's pray for our students this year. I would almost put that as number one. Even already, I hope you are praying for your students as you look ahead at the school year. This is God's work. I'm going to pray for them. God cares infinitely more about your students than what you care because he created them. Let's pray for them, see them as individuals that God created. Pray for the ones that are hard to love. Do you find students, some that are harder to love than others? There were surveys done on this, and I didn't bring that exact data along. But teachers, a survey was done where there was equal quality work given to veteran teachers to evaluate. So there was, let's say, 10 veteran teachers. Each person received 10 pieces of essays, let's say, that were all considered equal quality by evaluators before. And based on the names of those students, they could see the grades up and down. So if they had old-fashioned names, they tended to be graded lower. If they had more of the newer names, what's in vogue, they liked that name and they graded them better. Biases. How much more when you work with that child day after day? They did another experiment then where they put a picture of the student, just paper clipped it on. And of all things, people with glasses got worse scores. I thought glasses are cute. But across the board, when they had glasses, they tended to grade lower. That really scares me. I hope that scares you. How unfair to have those biases play out in our room. Well, we like certain ones. We smile at them. Listen, your class will pick up on that. They will. You must fight the battle well here and pray until you can love every student. The other students will pick that up and will disrespect you as a teacher. You know, it's sort of like brothers and sisters. They stick up for each other. Did you ever see students do the same thing? Where they stick up for each other, and if they feel like you're hard on a certain person, and you tend to just not show that friendliness, you will lose the respect of the ones that you want their respect because they care. They have a sense of fairness. Not only that child who you're mistreating, but the others who are watching pick up those vibes very quickly. And so just continually ask yourself, am I fair? Do I tend to look at certain students more than others? do I tend to want to make sure that they're okay with what's happening? Pray for that even-handedness in your classroom. B, pursue, and I just use some real simple words here, pursue deeper study in a particular subject. And I am sorry to say this. If you are a teacher who is teaching multiple grades, still just trying to get a grasp on it, it's okay. The last thing I want to happen in Faith Builders, at least in the lectures I give, is for teachers to walk away saying, why am I teaching? I can never do this. I can't live up to all these things. Well, I've told teachers already in this kind of a setting, remember, if you would go visit the classrooms of those instructors, you would be a little disappointed, maybe. You'd find out, and have it together as it looked. Just remember that. Secondly, remember that some of those teachers may be taught many years, and they slowly built the knowledge and tools that they seemed to just so readily be able to pull out of drawers and just show up. Took them a long time, and that's okay. But I would encourage you, if you have the time, this is energizing to me, to pursue deeper study in something. Whatever grade you're teaching, take something and just expand that beyond the books for your own inspiration. It also, I think, tells your students that you're a learner as well, right? It's exemplifying. You learned on your own. You dug into it. I find that to be just an energizing part of teaching. I know I don't teach first and second. I taught 9 and 10 for many years. This year I'm teaching 7th grade, which I'm so excited about after many years of not teaching 7th grade. But just to be able to bring in, so we're studying whatever it is in science and history in particular, those kind of subjects, to bring in extra things. Here's what I studied last night. Oh, he studies more than just the book. Things that you can add to build your knowledge and their knowledge as just an overall inspiration. It demonstrates something I think is worthwhile demonstrating. Again, don't do this in this time frame. Maybe here, but not here. You understand what I'm saying? We got done with the day, we have 20 minutes, or we can squeeze out another 10 minutes to do that study. Okay, but I'm tired, it's been a long day, I finally got all my work done. Now I should go ahead and get in the encyclopedia and do some extra study. Oh, maybe not. So this depends on your situation. And please, I'm not saying this as a way to make somebody feel guilty. Letter C, look for new ideas and methods for teaching certain lessons. So here's the other side of being a career teacher. Being a career teacher, you end up with, here's how I teach this, and this is successful. All right, so that is great. If you figured out a way to teach students to learn how to invert the second fraction in division, and they do it consistently, don't change it. How many know what I'm talking about? All right, so if we're multiplying 1/2 times 3/4, that's going to become 1/2, I'm sorry, divided by 3/4, it will become 1/2 times invert and multiply. So there's ways that we figure out how to teach things. One teacher said, I get a little boy up front and I kind of trip him on. He teaches 5th grade. I trip him on my foot and I turn him upside down. So this illustrates, you know, this inverting thing. And that works. Well, great. So there's things we've learned how to do. I have drawings in my head of maybe how to teach verb tenses. And I always lay it out this way, and I dot, 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 and I put the perfect tenses over here, and then I draw it down from there. It works. That's what I use. I'm not talking about that necessarily as much as, well, I got to think of something different. But in other ways, maybe an inspiration you got here. Years ago, I got this inspiration because of what I was listening to. It's not like I came up with this. I'm just going to give this as an idea, depending what you're teaching, to use learning maps. I was listening to this. This was back in the days of tapes. On something about advanced learning techniques. And they talked about learning maps. What is a learning map? I listened, and I don't know if I got exactly what they were saying, but here's what I came up with. And it energized my teaching in science for years, and in fact, I will use learning maps again now this year. So a learning map is simply doing this. Rather than giving students outlines, Roman numeral 1, then A, B, making them write it down, that is fine. I still do that in more complex things like biology. This would be about 5th to 8th grade range. Science seems to work well. So this is what I plan to do. I call it my irreducible minimum. This is what I want my students to learn. Rather than clutter it with way more information than they'll ever learn, I'm going to have them write down only what they must learn, and this is quizzable and testable all year long. Because I'm saying, I want you to know this. So I reduce it, irreducible minimum. We make these then in class. Of course, I have it all planned out on ahead, where, let me tell you first of all what I would do. They typically look like this. I draw a circle, and I put the title, and then we simply branch out from there with whatever information. So let's say we're studying stars and constellations, and I have three constellations I really want them to get, or five. So you might write up here, major constellations, and then you put them out from there. However you want to do this. Let's say you have a definition for what's a local cluster in galaxies. So this is the definition. I'll put that here. Maybe here I'll just have, you know, individual facts. You can draw this out. You got to think a little bit how you want it. Things can even branch out from there. So I will map that out. Then I will give them a master copy without any information filled in. Maybe just the title so that that's neatly done. Maybe a definition, maybe a little help, maybe none, depending on the age. They then will take this, and as I talk, I'll tell them when to put it. They think this is fun because they're filling in this, you know, it's very, very visual. Then I give them highlighters under control, right? I mean, not highlighters to make faces and to do all kinds of dumb stuff. They have to be restricted what they do, but maybe they'll use yellow, and they'll use yellow to highlight definitions. So that's, oh, a yellow means that was a definition. And then use whatever colors for different things. Highly visual, sometimes they'll say, I know, that's back on that page, it's down in that corner, highlighted in blue. it's amazing how much that color and visual helps them know where things are. I just find this so much more engaging than this kind of outline. Now, could you outline a biology course in this? I never tried anyhow. I go this route because it's way more complex. But for other ages where I really want to just get, this is what I want you to know, irreducible minimum, it's visual, three-ring binders, they will take them home, they'll page through them, and this is information I want them to keep alive all year. Not just teach it for a chapter, close it. Whew, we successfully studied that. Now I move on to the next thing. No, we want them to learn long-term. So I find something like that to be hugely energizing. As I look ahead and say, here's something I can do different. Just a whole new way of teaching. Maybe it's something you picked up at Teachers Week or from visiting another room. I never thought of making that kind of a chart for that. That would be, rather than doing the same thing over and over, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, I just always teach the same way. A lot of us burn out with that. We don't come to school with much enthusiasm. Our presentation is just kind of always the same. So I love getting ideas from other teachers. Some teachers do great with this, even in writing. So set it on the lesson today. We're going to do this instead. You write some paragraphs about whatever connects in even loosely to the lesson. Keeps the students engaged and also personally, I find engaging. And I would suggest that you take the subject you enjoy the least and see what you can do to spice it up. I tend to take the subject I enjoy the least and do the least with it. I ask my students, I don't know if some of our former students from my room and I ask this, said, what subject do you think I enjoy the most? Biology or literature, whatever. I had to ask this one more question, right? Which subject do you think I enjoy? Did I say the most the last time, right? That's what I wanted to say now. What subject do you think I enjoy the least? Now go ahead and tell me. Go ahead. English. Right. How do you know? Well, you're just not as excited when you get up front and you teach English. Ah, yes, true enough. So that's what I need to focus on. I need to take a subject like that and say, all right, I got to do better. The students know I don't enjoy it. That's why they don't enjoy it. That's partly why they don't enjoy it. What can I do? Right now I'm doing some reading on writing. Doing good writing, because I don't really enjoy writing but so much. I got to get energized with this. I make them write. I got to bring some fresh ideas to this. It's easy for me to come up with fresh ideas, or easier in biology or something that I really enjoy teaching. So take the subject you enjoy least and give it some extra effort. It will take the dullness away possibly, and your presentation will certainly be better. Last of all, make a list of goals for this year. I find this to be a hard discipline to do but I think it will help to reignite your passion to teach if you make some particular goals and hold yourself to them. All right, I will change my bulletin board every 6 weeks. I will do that. Or whatever you want to say, every 3 weeks, every, for the fellows, twice a year, whatever. I will have a devotions once a week that I particularly studied for that grew out of my own devotional life. There's so many, there's hundreds of things you can do, of course, here. It might have to do with correcting papers. It might have to do with books. I want to read 5 books this school year. Maybe you read 20, I don't know. But something that is measurable, okay? Goals that are measurable and that you can, as you teach, you can check up on. Okay, by now I should have read so many books. I should have completed this special project. Setting some goals like that just helps to bring, rather than just take school as it comes, helps to put some structure in it that I find to be engaging. All right, well, I wish you a good school year. God bless you as you lead Faith Builders. Remember, every year is just an opportunity to just do better than the year before. I'm burdened that we don't leave overwhelmed. I leave overwhelmed many times. Take each year, build your curriculum, build your knowledge, build your diversity, etc. I wish you a good year. You're excused.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.